Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Dave's Good Vibration Station with Dave Cohen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Abide with total presence. Who is the question? And is the essence? I is the witness. Abide with total presence. Back in the day, there was a great sage by the name Maharshi. He didn't preach, all he ever did say was ask yourself the question, who am I? Then stay present and ignore any answers. That's just your brain cancer. The story narrator, the conflict instigator, the one they call the mind. Make him face the mirror. Who am I? Repeat it like a mantra until ego throws a tantrum and gets booted out this mansion. And now there's no more question. I am that I am essence before the manifested of the sun, earth, and fleshes. I am his total presence. If all of life's a painting, then I am is this canvas. Prior to the brush strokes, consciousness is mirror smoke. Who's the one that wants to know? I will go when ego goes. Am I a phenomenal hollow whole finumeral? You see the tight conundrum, cause it's both sides of the pendulum. Subjectively observing, creating this momentum. The I am that tennis match, love to love, the place is packed. But all the games are just an act, the ego squatting in your flat, screaming, where's the owner at? He doesn't hear an answer back, so he thinks that he is that body, mind, vehicle. I am is ethereal, fueling all materials, totally invisible. So go beyond the physical. Who am I? The mystical. Who said that? The ego still. Follow to that hollow tube, the peace of bliss and solitude. The only one cannot be true. The duel is in your mind, dude. None of this is actual, it's all matter factual. Matter is still malleable, so molded into vacuum holes. Beautiful and magical, I am is behind it all.
What's up, guys? You've just tuned in to Dave's Good Vibration Station on LATalkRadio.com, world's most listened to internet talk radio station.
I is the witness, abide with total presence.
As you know, this is the show where we talk about anything and everything to raise your vibration, inspire you to a greater more, allow the wholeness of you to flow effortlessly through your vibrating molecules.
Time and space magician, a master over Maya. He's burning up these thoughts of all your wants and desires.
So today we have a very special show lined up for you guys. As you know, here we are once again in the studio of the Vibration Station every Sunday at 1 o'clock. I'm your host, Davey. We have a powerful episode lined up for you. First and foremost, here on the Vibration Station, we are inspired. We're inspired by people who have dedicated their lives to raising the vibration of other people on our planet. We can call them light leaders, light workers, any way you wish to call them. I have a very, very special individual that I feel ultra blessed to continually have here on the Vibration Station. He is the founder of many websites. That's geometrycode.com, brucerawls.com. He also has a blog that's acmiblog.com. If I'm not mistaken. Is that correct, Bruce? ACMI? Did I?
ACIM.
Excuse me.
You're close.
ACIM. I do. Excuse me. ACIMblog.com. You've got to make sure to check it out. Really, some really great content there. He's an author of some extremely powerful books. I'd like to welcome the one and only Bruce Rawls to the Vibration Station once again here on our episodes to raise your vibration. How you doing today, Bruce?
Great, David. Thank you. And as always, I appreciate your lavish introduction. And I figure I've got my hands full just trying to raise my own vibration. So I figure if I can do that, if I can get my own act together, that indirectly will be like, as we all can do, a benefit to everyone, because we're all interconnected, right?
Absolutely, man. You said that beautifully, as you always do. And you know, Bruce, one of the reasons why I feel super blessed to have you always coming on our show at least, you know, or once a month. And another feeling that I do feel is very grateful to have you is because you, your knowledge, right? You're passionate about geometry. You're passionate about learning more about the dimension in which we operate. You're passionate about learning more about the dimensions in which are outside of the plane in which we operate. This, to me, is the fundamental core, I guess you could say, the core knowledge of life. I feel like is understanding the laws of the universe, understanding as much as we possibly can about the time and space quantum mechanics in which we live in which we are, and the fact that you have dedicated your life to really learning and understanding these principles is truly inspiring, to say the least. So I want to say, Bruce, thank you for having a passion and following through with it and sticking with it, because it's your ability to stick with expanding your knowledge that allows us, the listeners, the, you know, benefit of learning everything that you've learned without having to spend years and years and years and years of knowledge and time soaking it all up. So it's really, it is a blessing, to say the least, you know, to be able to really dive in the depths of your knowledge and your brain and your consciousness when it comes to these facets of the human experience. So, Bruce, thank you very much for sharing this information. Today's show, inspired by Bruce, is going to warp the way that you view the world in which you live. Today we're talking
maybe.
About, yeah, well, depends on, exactly, depends on how much you already know and what you view in a moment-to-moment basis, but today's show is dedicated to dimensionality. Today's show is dedicated to expanding our knowledge on the dimensions in which the universe has. I don't even know how to say that. But, you know, also diving a little bit more into the third dimension, physical, non-physical intertwining. Bruce, can you just shed a little light here on dimensionality, interdimensionality? We are in the third dimension. Can you explain what that means for a physical being to be in the third dimension? And then what it would be like if you could perceive kind of like a fourth dimensional reality? Like, I guess, how could we open this topic up to the listeners to where it's not completely gibberish? Do you know what I'm saying?
It's challenging at best. I think it is, and I appreciate your setup for this, because it really is, you know, and to bounce off a prior comment, I think we all kind of have to be a little warped just to believe that we're here.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said, man.
But having said that, I think we obviously need to deal with where we think we're at, and we think that we live in a universe of three spatial dimensions and one temporal dimension, because we think that there's this thing called time that's just a single dimension. Wow. But yet physics tells us that there's more than that.
It's not the case.
Even just with, you know, everyday current contemporary physics anyway, suggests that there's more than one time dimension. One of the things that I was going to mention right off the bat, that was kind of an interesting little tidbit.
Yes.
A fun thing to you know, impress your friends with, maybe even.
Absolutely.
or at least ponder and say, wow, and think, wow, that's kind of interesting, is there's particles called tachyons.
Yes.
That travel faster than the speed of light.
Wow.
And that, you know, are recognized by physics, and they have, interestingly enough, three time dimensions, but only one space dimension.
Wow.
Where we have the opposite.
Right.
So we think that we have three spatial dimensions and one time dimension, but tachyons have the opposite of that. Which,
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that cool? I just think it's kind of – I don't know what it means, but I just think it's kind of cool.
Yes.
I have no clue what it means. But just to back up, though.
I love you, Bruce.
That whole premise, though, of dimensionality requires the idea of duality and differences and being able to compare one thing to another thing. So, so from a metaphysical standpoint, which is where I inevitably and inexorably head toward, because my physics always tends to move one way or another, sooner or later, to metaphysics. Then, if that's the premise, then we're saying that in order to have something that's in front of or behind, to the left or to the right, above or below, let's pick three spatial dimensions that we could probably relate to. There has to be, a forward and a backward. There has to be a polarity, which kind of ties into some other previous conversations we've had on your program about the Hermetic laws. And the fourth law of that is the law of polarity. The other four laws being mentalism, correspondence, vibration, rhythm, cause and effect, and gender generation. And we could easily get digressed into another hour of talking about that. But maybe our listeners can find the archives and we can visit it again some other time.
Yes, absolutely.
But suffice it to say, though, in order for dimensions to work, there has to be a self and an other. There has to be a consciousness and something to be conscious of.
Yes.
There has to be something that can be plotted on a – not necessarily on a physical graph, but in some manner we have to be able to differentiate between something and something else.
Absolutely.
So having said that, we all relate to – if you think back to your high school or college math classes where you've got X, Y, and Z axes. And anybody remember those?
Yes.
Well, that's our three spatial dimensions, and we think we live there. I mean, it'd be kind of silly to pretend that we don't. I mean, we'd, stub our toes a lot if we didn't recognize objects that we were approaching as we walked toward them and say, oh, yeah, I need to avoid that desk.
Yeah, I think the freeway would work really well that way.
Yeah, especially freeways. Yeah, there's defensive driving.
Yeah. No kidding. Yep. Some passive aggressive drivers out there. Really, that's funny. So go on. So we have our X and our Y axis. I'm doing this with my fingers. I'm holding up the axis.
And I have another thing that I've been listening to that is the audio is suddenly coming live that I didn't think it was going to happen. So if you'll excuse me.
Yeah, no problem. Absolutely.
Talk for a minute and I will find this. There we go.
No problem.
Found it.
Well, you're good, Bruce. You're on it, man.
I'm going to grab this Genesis Camp link and I'm going to get it out of there. So if they come back on again, I won't be hearing two conversations. In a sense, I guess it's sort of a metaphor that we all are hearing multiple conversations. We're hearing the conversation of the self and the other, aren't we? We're all. I think I've successfully fixed that little technical glitch. So, with apologies to your listeners.
No problem.
So, but that's really what it amounts to, isn't it? We all think that there's multiple things going on. We think that there's an inner and an outer. We think that there's these dimensions of space and time to compare things with.
Right.
And within that context, I think we need to obviously operate within that in order to get along in the world and to be helpful and kind and to do all the things that would make sense, right?
Absolutely.
Compassion
and
so forth. Yes. But there's a lot of things in physics, I think, that might be good to review before looking at dimensions. In this the second chapter of my second book, which is called The Geometry Code, I made a chapter called Take Home Lessons from Modern Physics. And the opening quotes, that I put three quotes from three relatively famous people in the realm of physics, just to kind of set the stage for how, you know, we make assumptions about things that aren't necessarily true. The first one is from Niels Bohr, who is one of the pioneers of quantum mechanics. And he says, if quantum mechanics hasn't profoundly shocked you, you haven't understood it yet.
I love that.
Isn't that great?
Oh, that is so cool. That is awesome.
And Werner Heisenberg.
Yes.
Another colleague from that same era.
Absolutely.
You know, the uncertainty theory, right?
Yes.
For any of your listeners who've studied that, he said, not only is the universe stranger than we think, it is stranger than we can think.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. That's – oh, I love that.
And to wrap up with a little more contemporary physics luminary, we have Brian Greene, who does a lot of great PBS documentaries, things like that.
Yes.
The boldness of asking deep questions may require unforeseen flexibility if we are to accept the answers.
Wow.
So, you know, I sometimes I joke with people that I grew up in a nuclear family, you know, figuratively and literally, because my dad actually supervised the operations on a cyclotron or an atom smasher. So I kind of grew up with this stuff through osmosis.
That's amazing, Bruce.
Yeah.
You were born into this, man.
Just a little bit, pretty naturally. Yeah.
That is so cool.
So the physics, I never really, you know, I wouldn't call myself a physicist by any stretch of the imagination, but I did take some physics classes in high school and college, and I've always been fascinated with it, but I've always wanted to know, well, what's the metaphysics?
Right.
You know, how come? What's it for?
Exactly.
Why am I studying this? You know, how does this apply to me? And I think that's an important question we always need to ask ourselves with anything that we do. You know, what's the purpose? What's the why?
Absolutely.
I was one of those obnoxious kids in school. Of course, we kept asking why.
But it led you.
Why?
No, but it led you to be such an expansively knowledgeable individual, man. So it's
I don't know
well
about that,
it.
But I definitely have maintained the curiosity and the wonder of why do we do things the way we do? Why do we believe what we believe?
And, yeah.
And it seems like it always boils down to, you know, these two completely exclusive thought systems that the previous chapter in the same book addresses, which is the thought system of inclusion and the thought system of exclusion.
Yes.
And the exclusion is the one, of course, we hang out most of the time. That's the what's in it for me paradigm, the ego-based.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not effective. I think if we can look at that orientation as just not terribly helpful and it isn't effective in getting what we really want, which I think is peace of mind. And there's things in physics, I think, that really support metaphysics.
Absolutely.
Here's a little bit about the Copenhagen interpretation again, which the whole foundation of dimensionality and what we do with it ties into our whole perspective on physics. And there's a lot of modern physics that we just kind of conveniently ignore, or use a former presidential candidate's phrase, it's an inconvenient truth. You know, we kind of like when we build houses and we level the pad for a nice flat foundation, forgetting that for a first approximation, certainly, yeah, we probably want it, you know, as level as we can get it. But
yeah, maybe
we're making a flat surface that's a tiny little speck on a sphere or a spheroid.
Right.
So we're kind of, you know, conveniently ignoring the fact that the geometry that we're superimposing, that's a linear one, is really on top of a curved geometry. But the same thing is true with physics. We do the same thing. We just kind of conveniently, as a first approximation, say that the Newtonian model is, you know, for most of our everyday stuff, works fine.
Exactly.
But that's really kind of becoming no longer true and really became that way a few decades ago when we started using electronics. Because for semiconductors to work, we had to have the foundation of quantum mechanics and the whole realm of quantum physics is required for semiconductor theory. So even your old, you know, in a box in the garage somewhere, transistor radio.
Wow.
Really wouldn't have happened had Bohr and Heisenberg and Planck and Einstein and Bohm and all these folks that, you know, built off of each other's work to build up to the theory that allows us to really look at dimensionality in a totally different way. So I think right out of the chute, whatever metaphor you want, the Copenhagen interpretation, I think, is a really important place to start, which is basically the wave-particle duality. So here's a little bit from Wikipedia.
Beautiful.
On the Copenhagen interpretation.
Beautiful.
And it goes, the new theories were inspired by laboratory experiments and based on the idea that matter has both wave and particle aspects. One of the consequences derived by Heisenberg was that knowledge of the position of a particle limits how precisely its momentum can be known, and vice versa. The results of their own burgeoning understanding disoriented Bohr and Heisenberg, and some physicists concluded that, and I've underlined this, human observation of a microscopic event, and another underline here, changes the reality of the event.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
So that's really what shook, what rocked their world. I mean, they gathered in Copenhagen. I could just imagine if somebody could, you know, do a little time travel and go back to their meeting there, whatever conference or whatever where they congregated, and looked at their expression when they kind of realized.
There must have been a good 5 minutes of just complete silence.
It's sort of like this, I'll use a euphemistic phrase, holy excrement, you know? What are we going to tell the world here, you know? Because, like, this is like a radical undoing, at least a radical questioning of that Newtonian model, because it basically says, well, this mind thing that we've conveniently swept under the rug, and you know, if anybody studies psychology in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, they probably remember the model with the rats I'm doing a brain fade, the fellow that put forth the mechanistic theory.
The original, was it kind of the
It'll come to me anyway. But
no problem.
But it's not tip of my tongue. But anyway, that classic model that was basically percolated into psychology was the idea that, you know, we're just machines.
Yes.
And we're just like, you know, massively complex collections of billiard balls bouncing off each other.
Yes.
And even Freud, who delivered some brilliant insights, which paved the way for modern metaphysics in terms of projection theory. Even Freud believed that ultimately that all of our behavior could be understood biochemically eventually.
Wow.
I mean, that mechanistic worldview is not only very limiting, but it's also pretty depressing. It just kind of means that there really isn't any choice.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
But maybe they were right on the level of form, because maybe, what if, here's another radical idea, that like the ones that shook the now quantum physicists world back then.
Yes.
What if on a physical level the script is written? What if all the billiard ball Newtonian models work on that level for any given slice of reality, for any given what's the term I'm using, parallel universe?
What if
our interpretation or willingness to reject the interpretation that our egos put forth is responsible for us being able to make quantum jumps into other parallel universes?
Where
other things are happening. And there are authors like Gary Renard, whose mentors, Artin and Persa, if any of your listeners are familiar with that newly classic metaphysical worker, would suggest, you know, that we actually have an opportunity to forgive the dreamer, and then that forgiveness process releases us from our mental grip on a particular reality, so that we can actually, you know, bypass some of the lessons we need to bypass. Or bypass the shall we say, the suffering of having to deal with our projections only if we don't look at them, if we don't acknowledge them and say, oh yeah, I'm in some way responsible for having chosen this. And as we do, we recognize that it has no effect on what we really are.
Right.
And that frees us up to then jump to the next, you know, kind of like the shooting ladders thing, to the next learning opportunity, the next forgiveness lesson, if you will.
Exactly. Bruce, Michio Kaku talks a lot about this idea.
Right.
I'm sure listeners and Bruce, I'm sure you may have seen the movie What the Bleep Do We Know?
Yes,
the quantum classic. So
we
see in that right when the boy and listeners, if you have seen the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, you'll know what I'm referring to. If not, I highly suggest just checking it out. It's really a wonderful. In layman's terms, explains quantum physics. A wonderful way to kind of get your foot in the door with quantum physics.
It's a great introduction, yes.
It really is. There's a scene where this boy is bouncing this basketball, and he's talking about electromagnetic, basically the electromagnetic waves off of the basketball and how they're never actually touching the floor. How it's just an exchange of energy is all that's occurring. There's actually no physical intertwining that's happening. But then a little bit later in the explanation, he starts talking about the boy being in two places. Three places, four places, five places at once. And then he talks about the basketball. Basically, he goes into this idea of what we're talking about here of parallel realities. How there is pre-existing at every moment the potential for us to, through our consciousness, transcend certain vibrational platforms or quote-unquote parallel realities and wind up through our belief system, through our consciousness, on another parallel reality. But it is, to us, it looks exactly the same as any other parallel Earth reality. So it's not like we're conscious of the shift in our reality, because it's like this infinite number of parallel realities, and wherever our vibration has momentum is where the realities are then given momentum. And like, I have this visual and I can't explain it, but
I think you're doing great.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, man. It's think of like, think of these, just think of like millions, an infinite number of pieces of paper just lined up together. Just, and each of these pieces of paper is another parallel reality, represents another vibrational setting, which has everything in your consciousness that you could possibly imagine reflecting, and it meets that reflection. But then the moment, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce, but if I'm not mistaken, what Bruce is referring to is that moment in your belief system where you actually break down some walls, and you have what we kind of would call an aha moment, if you will, where literally like the sky just opens up and like 20 light bulbs, you're like, oh my goodness. What happens is you literally are shifting your consciousness through time and space, and you now are on a different vibrational paradigm with a whole different set of vibrational opportunities that are a perfect match to your vibrational reflection. So,
beautifully stated.
Thanks,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah,
thanks.
And perhaps the way that works,
yes,
is,
oh,
that,
yeah,
if we let go of our grievances and challenge the assumptions of our ego minds and just say, is it really worth being upset about this alleged other person's behavior that is impacting my peace,
right?
At any given moment, you know, whether it's the most seemingly minor irritation, you know, a hangnail, say, or something unimaginably horrific like a Holocaust. You know, it doesn't. Yes. The magnitude may not actually be important. It's really the idea that if we can let go of our judgments and condemnations that appear to be taking the form of somebody else, but are really directed at ourselves, because again, quantum theory might possibly suggest that there isn't anyone else.
Yeah, right.
If duality is scrutinized carefully, then that may be the mechanism by which we arrive at a kinder parallel universe.
Yes.
Where we're not slogging ourselves through that particular Newtonian layer.
Yes.
Within that layer, everything seems to happen absolutely perfect, like a nice billiard ball mechanical system, you know, without any deviations from all those laws.
Yes. Yes. Man, Bruce, I'm telling you, man, you have such a powerful way with words. You inspire me every time. Like, you are a living aha moment, Bruce.
Yes. Well, I'm still, like everybody else, working on those ahas, and I think the challenge we all have really is to number one, implement them for ourselves. You know, catch ourselves when we recognize that we're doing something that isn't helpful to ourselves or other people, and you know, just put the vehicle in reverse and say, I'm not going there. I'm not going to do anything that's harmful. I mean, it's sort of that Hippocratic oath that doctors take. You know, above all, do no harm. You know, or what the Dalai Lama says. You know, my religion is simple. It's kindness. You know,
and
if we can do that, we are mobilizing the optimal choices in our minds for navigating through all these, you know, parallel realities to what could be the optimal return trip home to the peace we never left.
Yes, exactly. And if only we as an Earth society could kind of accept little by little, right? You get a group of people over here that accept it, then a group of people over here that accept it, then a group of people over here that. But then at the same time, wait, it's all a reflection, so it doesn't matter if the group over here is accepting it, because you are just shifting to the reality and which best suits your reflection. So if you're worried about other groups of the world getting it, then you will, I guess, hear about it, or you'll be on a vibrational reality that literally yields to you whatever your vibrational interpretation of these other groups understanding these concepts is perceived in your consciousness. Or if you just take it for what it is and say that these groups of people have nothing to do with me, because I am all that is a part of me is me, and my reality is simply an extension of me, just as my arms and my fingers are an extension of me, right? I'm going to dip into this concept real quick, and I will say this to myself in the mirror, just as like a reinforcement, right? What I say is something I love this, and it's the idea that nothing is set in stone ever, and it can always be manipulated by my thoughts. I kind of say that to myself to empower myself, to give myself some power when I am feeling a little down, or, you know, work is happening, and something isn't coming through with work, and I need these documents, or blah blah blah, or over here, and I did da da da, whatever it is that potentially could throw me off my vibration of kindness. In the words of the Dalai Lama, being his religion, which I would completely agree to say that is mine too. Love, you know, gratitude, expansion, being open to, you know, universal laws, being open to, you know, the laws of polarity, being open to these basic fundamental laws that govern our reality, our consciousness, our molecules, our atoms, everything. If we can start to empower ourselves a little bit with the understanding that we are vibrational beings in a vibrational universe, and really the only thing that we need to do to live in a world that will yield to us everything that we are quote-unquote asking for is, all we have to do is become whatever it is that we're asking for. You want $1 million, feel like you have $1 million before you even could perceive of how $1 million is going to come, and one way or another, the universe will yield to you the pile of money. A pile of money is nothing. It's literally quantum belief. All it is is just what you expect. It's all it is. What you expect. Money, it's what you expect. It's, you know, relationships, it's what you expect. It's all a vibrational interpretation, a vibrational reflection of your consciousness, and it's all one.
Yeah, and it's all smoke and mirrors.
Exactly, it's all smoke and mirrors. Exactly.
You brought up a really, I think, important topic point area of inquiry a couple of moments ago, David.
Thanks, Bruce.
When you mentioned the idea that it doesn't really matter what other people think of us,
yes,
but what it does matter tremendously is what we think of other people.
Yes.
Because that's what's going through our minds. That's what's the mechanism by which we're choosing the thought system that determines which of these infinite number of planes of parallel realities we're moving through or toward at any given moment. So if we can, and I have another farther on in this book that I haven't got to yet. I come up with a simple numerical comparison that I think can be sort of fun and helpful, and that is that, you know, perhaps when we're responsible to someone else, anyone else, everyone else,
yes,
yes, it's only half as much effort as when we're responsible for everyone else.
Yes. Wow.
Get the two and the four.
Say that one more time, just for the full grasp interpretation.
Sure, yeah. Sure. If we're responsible to everyone or someone else,
yes,
it's only half as much work and effort as being responsible for everyone else.
Okay.
So, and I think it's easy to get hung up on being concerned about how we might be received or perceived or whatever, and forget that it's really what we contribute,
yes,
at any given moment that,
yes,
makes all the difference.
Yes, yes,
and,
yes.
And it's really, you know, what comes out of our mind is really a reflection of what we put into it. And we have that choice moment to moment. And it's really incredibly simple because we can make it as complicated as we want, but it really boils down to just these two thought systems of inclusion and exclusion.
Wow. It really, yeah. I mean, that really is everything. So if we practice and honor the idea that everything is a reflection of consciousness, and what you just said, which is my new favorite quote, and I'm going to quote Bruce Rawls, it's much easier to be, it's not as difficult to be responsible to, or basically the idea that I'm trying to find the words, but the idea being that it's a lot easier to just be responsible for the way that you perceive the person than being responsible for what the person does to you,
and
having an emotional tie to being angry or out of alignment just because this person has quote unquote done you wrong, when really you can just fix it in your consciousness, and then you'll get the automatic reflection once you really let it go and then allow for your consciousness to shift into a reality which yields to you the reflection of having a peaceful relationship with whoever you would originally had a confrontation with. And then if you would have walked that road of out of alignment and anger, you would wind up not on this road of path, or this path of happiness and this road of joy. So that's where kind of the parallel universe come in. And each and every single, and then that ties into each and every single moment, we have an opportunity to pivot our vibration in any way in which we choose. So it's like if we have been ego-based in the past, if we have been focused on the, you know, we talk about the one mind, we focus on the duality mind, that's when we don't beat yourself up because you've done that. Just shift your consciousness and kind of pivot towards being a little more in the oneness state of consciousness.
Yeah, and not beating yourself up is hugely important. I think when we catch ourselves indulging in something that we know is ineffective and not benevolent.
Absolutely.
The worst possible thing to do is to condemn ourselves for that. But instead, if we can just say, "Oh yeah, I was afraid. I was invested in an identity that was based on the idea of separation. That there was somehow possible for my welfare and this other person's or multiple person's welfare to be independent of mine."
Yes.
If modern physics is right, then as physicist John Wheeler said, there's no out there.
Right. Exactly.
So that would imply that what we see may or may not change in terms of the reflection coming back to us, but we've modified the cause. We've set into motion a different cause where we're no longer at the effect of what happens to us because we recognize that is a reflection, and that reflection is really just the playing out of a script that was written, you know, however many millions of millennia ago.
Yeah, no kidding.
Multiple billions of years, if we kind of want to go with the accepted age of the universe. Maybe the tiny mad idea of separation is synonymous with the physicist notion of the Big Bang, you know, and perhaps the whole entire belief in separation is a result of one single solitary thought that it would be possible to leave perfect oneness.
Whoa.
But that's kind of, you know, we're getting sort of metaphysical here, but I think it's helpful to keep some of those ideas in mind when we look at some of the things like the Copenhagen interpretation again. So I have another quote from that if I can
read
it. Yeah. This is also from Wikipedia. It says, "Light passes through double slits and onto a screen, resulting in a diffraction pattern. Is light a particle or a wave?"
Wow.
The Copenhagen interpretation: "Light is neither.
Wow.
A particular experiment can demonstrate particle, photon, or wave properties, but not both at the same time. The same experiment can, in theory, be performed with any physical system: electrons, protons, atoms, molecules, viruses, bacteria, cats, humans, elephants, planets, etc. In practice, it has been performed for light, electrons, Buckminster fullerene, and some atoms."
Wow.
So this, it took a few decades for the idea to settle in, and then the pragmatic application started happening, you know, where we basically started making semiconductors and doing things with advanced physics, and now people like my niece are employed studying gravitational waves in outer space with laser interferometry, you know, things
amazing.
Like that.
That's amazing.
Isn't that fun?
That is so cool. That is so cool.
But, you know, none of that would have happened had that double slit experiment not triggered a recognition that mind somehow was primary. Now we kind of conveniently ignore that, but that was really a fundamental idea that the outcome, it depends on the experimenter.
Yes.
And then the entanglement, I think, is another really cool thing. There's an acronym called EPR for Einstein, Podolsky, Rosen. The paradox here. Now, here's another Wikipedia page that I think is amazing. Entangled particles are emitted in a single event. Conservation laws ensured that the measured spin of one particle must be the opposite of the measured spin of the other, so that if the spin of one particle is measured, the spin of the other particle is now instantaneously known.
Yes.
the most discomforting aspect of this paradox is that the effect is instantaneous, so that something that happens in one galaxy could cause an instantaneous change in another galaxy. But according to Einstein's theory of special relativity, no information bearing signal or entity can travel at or faster than the speed of light, which is finite. Thus, it seems as if the Copenhagen interpretation is inconsistent with special relativity. Well, what if the basic assumption, and again, I think, you know, John Wheeler's, you know, if there's no out there out there, what if the dimensions that we think comprise, hold your double fingers in the air, quote, reality, unquote, the reality that we've all bought into, hook, line, and sinker, that we think is the real deal, 24/7, 365, and sometimes 365 and a quarter on leap years, accounting for leap years, then what if that is really questionable? Wow. What if we like the little obnoxious kid in the classroom, ask why is that true, you know? And you know, maybe we're just seeing double. And I'm going to jump ahead to a quote from Idris Shah's book, The Caravan of Dreams.
Beautiful.
And this is a little – he's a wonderful book of Sufi stories if you ever get a chance to read some of these. A father said to his double-seeing son, "Son, you see two instead of one." "How can that be?" the boy replied. "If I were, there would seem to be four moons up there in place of two."
That is funny.
Isn't that great? But what if the duality that we are so completely mesmerized by, we're so immersed in it, what if we don't question the very premise that modern physics really helps us to challenge, to helps us to question? What if we were to question that and say, well, what if these three spatial dimensions and or however many beyond that, that mathematics helps us look at when we took a look at polychora and polytopes of higher dimensions that are mathematically consistent, which is kind of bizarre and fun.
Totally.
And
there's,
if you go to the resources page on the Geometry Code website, I have some examples of some of these animations and links to higher dimensional shapes and things, which is really kind of fun stuff.
Oh, you're definitely, listeners, you guys are definitely going to want to check that out. I was going to say, whenever you get a chance, if you're in front of your computer right now, I highly aid you to go to geometrycode.com. That's just geometry, G-E-O-M-E-T-R-Y, code, C-O-D-E.com. Make sure you, this website is amazing. Yeah, resources page, there's a bunch of amazing stuff. I mean, the gallery, the store, you got to check out. You got to make sure to pick up a copy of the Geometry Code, which contains the information that we're talking about here today on today's episode. It's extremely powerful. You can pick it up in a Kindle edition. You can also pick it up as just a physical copy. And then there's also an electronic copy that's available as well. The Geometry Code, it's available Amazon. It's available on thegeometrycode.com. And then there's a couple other books there that you're going to want to check out. Sacred Geometry Design Sourcebook. Absolutely love this source book. It is extremely powerful and definitely offer you some geometry that you might just may haven't seen before. And it's going to be a great use of your time, guys. Great use of your time. An amazing. It's probably the best place that you could put your money is investing in your knowledge. So this is the place to be, guys. Geometrycode.com. Make sure to check it out. Sorry to interrupt you, Bruce. Please.
Thank you for that generous plug, David. What I was going to direct your listeners to when they have access to a web browser is on the Geometry Code resources page, which if you can just go to geometrycode.com/resources.
Yes.
If you scroll down to links up to sites about polyhedra and higher dimensional polytopes, there's some really cool animations, and I can see due to one of these little plugins I have that reminds me when I've got broken links that there are some broken links at that first bulleted item that has a little spinning polyhedra there.
That's such an awesome little icon, that polyhedra.
Well, thanks. Yeah, that's that's just something fun that I put together.
I love that.
But if you click on the one that says amazing 4D animations,
yes,
3D slices of 4D objects. I think that really makes a really good metaphor. If another way to look at it is if you've seen the Magic Eye books that were popular a decade or two ago, maybe more than that. Where you basically look, you kind of defocus. The way your eyes normally would look at a printed page, and you look past that.
Yes, exactly.
Toward the very end of the Sacred Geometry Design Sourcebook, I put in a stereogram, which is basically what these are. And the idea being that you can encode three-dimensional information into a two-dimensional space.
Wow.
And that's what these stereograms and the magic eye images are. So the way those work is your left eye focuses on the page, your right eye focuses on the page, but actually beyond the page. So what happens is if you look past the page, you know, a few inches, the field of view then fabricates a three-dimensional image in the brain that then we see as a three-dimensional image. So in the case of the one I put in the back of the first book, I took – actually, in fact, it's the shape that's spinning around on the resources page.
That's awesome.
Numerous examples of it. It's what's called a small stellated dodecahedron. And I have that image replicated in a 2x3 grid so that if you look at that stereogram in the back of the book, what looks like, you know, just when you just flip open the page – until you look at it the right way, it looked like just a bunch of random black and white dots. But if you get to where you can overlap the reference dots at the top of the page, or the bottom, I can't remember. Anyway, it'll basically bring into focus as you focus past the page these six identical geometric shapes.
Wow.
And it's when it happens, just like if you've seen any of these magic eye posters or images. It's like it's just the most amazing thing when you first have that experience. It's like, oh my gosh, there's this whole 3D thing that's just floating in front of me,
right?
And there it is, right there. But it's been there all along.
Exactly.
We just didn't see it.
It's just conscious.
And I think
right?
that's the whole idea of Flatland. There's a wonderful book that was written about a century ago about Flatland, and the idea being, what if there were these two-dimensional creatures that were confined to to 2D instead of 3D that we think we're confined to?
Exactly.
And I think of what would be the perfect, you know, prank to pull on a Flatlander. Well, you just, if they were on a piece of paper, you just take a pencil and poke it through their reality.
Exactly.
And they'd shout to each other, oh my gosh, I'm hallucinating. I see this black dot and it's growing bigger. And now it's turned into a brown circle. And now we're, you know, into the wood of the pencil, right? And
right.
Now it's a yellow hexagon. Yeah. You know? And it'll be stay a yellow hexagon for a little while. And then finally, oh, now it's turned into a, maybe let's say the metal or the holding the eraser is green. And oh, now it's a green circle. And now it's a slightly smaller pink circle where the eraser is. And now it disappeared.
It's
Call
gone.
National Enquirer. You know, this is a 11 o'clock news story, right?
That's funny.
And the Flatlanders would be perfectly reasonably justified in thinking that they'd have this massive psychic paranormal experience, right?
Just like we would, right?
Yeah.
As if a fourth or fifth dimensional, you know, experience were
right.
to be presented.
Right.
Oh,
right. So,
man.
So things that we can't explain here in our little, you know, proverbial virtual flatland, if you will.
Yes.
We just pass off as oh, well, that's just, you know, somebody's imagination.
Exactly.
Or we relegate it to you know, some sort of a psychological aberration or whatever. But
But
we're all in our own little Truman Show here. I happened to watch
true.
A little bit of that movie yesterday, some clips on YouTube.
I love that.
And there's a local venue that's going to be airing that and talking about it here in the Denver area in a week or two. So I was reminded of it, and I was like, oh yeah, that's such a great metaphor, because we're all living in this little Truman Show of our own awareness.
It's so true. It is
and,
so true.
And it's just such a fragile little isolated thing that we can get spooked by so easily. But just to remember, we made it up.
Yes, it's so true.
If we look at the script and the screenplay in our mind, you know, our signature's on every page.
It is so true. Bruce, so, I know, man. I'm so sorry. We're just running out of time, my friend. I want to thank you so much for coming here on the Vibration Station once again. It is so unexplainably powerful and knowledgeable. I mean, we could sit here and talk for hours, days, and still not come to a point where we're satisfied with the conversation. But for all our listeners out there, I want to make sure that you're tuning in to geometrycode.com, brucerawls.com, and it's my turn to get it. My turn to get this right. This is acimblog.com, right?
Thanks, David.
Of course. Bruce Rawls, everyone. All the unconditional love, light, happiness, joy, abundance, and laughter from our hearts to yours, Bruce. Thank you so much for shedding
the
information.
Yeah, thanks to all the listeners for sharing the art with us.
Absolutely. And guys, let's make sure to we'll follow Good Vibe Station here on Twitter, and we'll never forget to keep our vibrations high and all the love, light, happiness, joy, and laughter from our hearts to yours. Thank you guys so much. Have a beautiful, blessed Sunday, and we will see you next week. And make sure to look out for Bruce in just about 4 weeks from today. Thank you guys so much. Always all the love and light. Bye-bye.